ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So tonight I will be reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 62, which deals with a very important subject. It's the subject of surrender to the Supreme Lord. How much are we willing to surrender? And this particular verse deals with the value, the reason, the importance of surrender, and what surrender actually is. So I'll read the verse. If any of you know it, you're welcome to sing it after I do. Tameva sharanam gacha. Let me try it again. Tameva sharanam gacha. Sarva bhavena bharata. Sarva bhavena bharata. Tat prasadat param shantim. Tat prasadat param shantim. Stanam prapsyasi shashvatam. Stanam prapsyasi shashvatam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, in case anybody's here for the first time. This conversation takes place in the middle of a battlefield just before a giant world war is about to proceed. So Arjuna is in a very antsy, hesitant, uncertain state, and he doesn't want to fight. He's one of the greatest warriors in the world, but for various reasons that he gives, he is not very inclined to want to fight this battle. And so this is the end of the discourse that Krishna is giving him so many reasons why he should fight and how he has not only nothing to lose but everything to gain. So he says here in this verse, O scion of Bharat. A scion, as you know, is a descendant, someone who comes from a particular dynasty or family. So he's saying, O scion of Bharat, and the Bharat is a dynasty that existed approximately 5,000 years ago, which Krishna is addressing to Arjuna. He says, O scion, or descendant of Bharat, surrender unto him. So Krishna is referring to himself as a him now, in the third person. Most of the time he expresses himself in the first person, I. But sometimes he refers to himself as a he or a him. And in this case he's doing that. Surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Please repeat, O scion of Bharat, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A living entity should therefore surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, and that will relieve him from all kinds of miseries of this material existence. By such surrender, not only will one be released from all miseries in this life, but at the end, he will reach the Supreme God, The transcendental world is described in the Vedic literature, the Rig Veda 122.20, as Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Since all of creation is the kingdom of God, everything material is actually what? Yes, it's spiritual. And why is it spiritual? Because everything in this world comes from the supreme spiritual Lord. So everything comes from him, therefore it must be spiritual. But there are two kinds of energies. There's an inferior energy and a superior energy. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Altogether, these eight are my separated material inferior energies. Besides these, there is another kind of energy, and it is known as the superior energy. And all living entities are involved in acting in this material world. They are trying to exploit the resources of this material world. So we, as souls, are the superior energy, and as bodies are the inferior energy. So we are a combination of inferior and superior energy, both of which come from the Supreme Lord. The living entities in this material world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include what? The mind, yes. So, continuing on. Since all of creation is the kingdom of God, everything material is actually spiritual. But Paramam Padam specifically refers to the eternal abode, which is called the spiritual sky or Vaikuntha. That is not of this material world. It is of the eternal spiritual world. It is a world which is everlasting, which never ends, which never dissolves. But this world which we live in does come to an end at some point in time, generally at the end of one of Lord Brahma's days, which lasts for 4,320,000,000, how many years? Billion years. That's a long time he lives, got a long life. He doesn't have to worry about taking longevity pills. He has a very long life. So Lord Brahma, he lives that long. And at the end of his one day, he goes to sleep. And during that day, what happens is that the seven lower planetary systems, which are beneath this planet, and then the three middle planetary systems, such as the Earth planet, the planets between the Earth and the Sun, And also there's those of you who know the Bhag Gayatri mantra, Om Bhur Bhuva Sva. So there's the Bhuvar planets, which I just mentioned, and Svar planets, or the Svarga planets, are the planets that go from the sun planet all the way to Dhruva Loka. So, and those are known as the, for example, the world of Indra, or the heavenly planets, exist there. So all those planets that I just mentioned, or the planetary system that I just mentioned, that is dissolved. But those planetary systems which exist above the ones I mentioned, such as Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Maharloka comes first, and then comes Janaloka and Tapaloka, and then Satyaloka, or also known as Brahmaloka, they remain during this disillusion. However, ultimately, when Lord Brahma, he finally decides to, he reaches 100 years, which is a long, long time, which goes into the trillions of years, and he finally leaves and generally goes back to the eternal world. He graduates, so to speak. And all the planets, they completely dissolve. Only at a later time, Lord Vishnu again recreates it. So I just wanted to give some idea of some of the background of what is being spoken of here. Krishna has already been accepted by Arjuna as the Supreme. He was accepted in the 10th chapter as Param Brahma Param Dhamma. Arjuna has accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Supreme Abode of all living entities, not only because of his personal experience, but also because of the evidence of great authorities like Narada Muni, Asita Muni, Devala Muni, and Vyasadeva. So, all of these, Arjuna accepted what Krishna had said on the basis of what we call disciplic succession. All this knowledge is coming in disciplic succession. Just as you have a family and you have a succession, you have a father and then you have a son, then another son and so forth. When the father dies, then in the succession, the oldest son generally takes over and he rules the roost, so to speak. So, and we also have a disciplic succession which comes from Lord Sri Krishna. And Lord Krishna does explain this disciplic succession to Arjuna. He says that I explained this system of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan explained it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu, the father of mankind, he explained it to Ikshvaku, his son. That supreme science was thus received in disciplic succession, and the saintly kings, they understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and the science as it is appears to be lost. So Krishna comes to revive that science, so the people don't have to go on being miserable day after day, year after year, life after life. They get the science of Krishna consciousness, which enables them to become free of the miseries, as it is mentioned to here in this verse, through the process of surrendering to Krishna, which I will go into in a few moments. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme Lord, Krishna says, is today told by me to you. And therefore, is today told by me to you. And therefore, because you are my friend and my devotee, you can understand the mystery of this science. So that is a qualification for understanding the Bhagavad Gita. The qualification, of course, if you can become the friend of Krishna and the devotee of Krishna, then that qualifies you or enables you to achieve the grace of Krishna, and through that grace you are enabled to understand more and more and more. As the verse says, that supreme science was thus received in disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time the succession was broken, and the science as it is appears to be lost. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme Lord is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and therefore you can understand the transcendental mystery of this science. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So the chief principle that is being discussed in this particular verse is surrender. So what does it mean to surrender unto the Supreme Lord? And why should one surrender unto the Supreme Lord? Well, we have to go back to our origins. Originally, we were all Krishna-conscious living entities. We're all living in the eternal world. And we were all happy in the eternal world. We were all serving the Lord in the eternal world. But we all have independence, minute independence. Krishna has infinite independence. There's no limit to it. Ours is limited. Independence means that I can exercise it, or if I don't want to exercise it, I don't have to. To be independent means to declare one's separateness and willfulness. This is what independence is. So if you are in the eternal world and all you want to do is serve the Lord, love the Lord, honor the Lord, please the Lord, then there is no need for independence because the devotee considers himself, because he's small, he's tiny, and he comes from the Lord as a dependent upon the Lord, just as we, when we were children, we were dependent upon our parents. And our parents fed us, they sheltered us, cleansed us, guided us, schooled us, educated us, medicated us when necessary. And we were dependent upon them, and then we became adults. So similarly, we are always dependent upon the Lord. And in the eternal world, everyone knows he or she is an eternal servant of the Lord. Jivera Swarupahoy Krishnera Nisya Das. The constitutional position of the living entity is to be an eternal servant of God. That is our real business. That is our true business. Now, when we decide if we should choose to no longer serve God, but want to be served as a God, as a Lord, then we lose our qualification to continue living in the eternal world. Because everyone wants to serve there. No one wants to be served. Everyone wants to continue as a servant. So that being the qualification, as long as you no longer want to serve but want to become a Lord, then what happens, the result of wanting to become a Lord is that you're no longer fit to live in the eternal world. So what does it mean to be a Lord? It means that you enjoy. It means that you own or you control. And it means that everyone is your friend. This is what lordship is all about. So when you no longer want to serve the eternal Lord and increase his pleasure or recognize his power or his sway, or no longer want to even concern yourself to want to be his friend anymore, you're no longer fit to be in that world. So where do you go? You come here. This is the place where persons can become or have the illusion of becoming lords. And we all have some experience of lordship. If you're a father or a mother and you have children, well, you can boss your kids around. Do this, do that. No, no, don't do that. Don't do this. And you're the Lord. And if he protests, well, then you don't give him ice cream and then he won't protest. Because he wants to get his sweets. He wants to get his pleasure or her pleasure. So as long as we want to be lords, then in the material world, we get different positions of lordship. As I said, you can be a father, you can be a mother, or you can be a little child and you have a dog and you tell the dog what to do. You shout, hey, go here, or kick the dog, or shout at the dog, or pet the dog, and the dog obeys you. So you get a little lordship even when we're children. Or as we grow up, we maybe get lordship when we are. Now, the children can't make noise here while this is going on. Thank you. So what happens is that as we grow up, we may become head of a corporation, or we may become actors or actresses, and we are admired, we are glorified, we're looked up to. And that's a form of lordship. Now, how come we forget the real Lord? Well, this is called Maya, or the illusory energy. The illusory energy keeps us from thinking about the eternal, the highest, the most glorious, which is the Supreme Lord. And we, in fact, instead begin to impersonate the Supreme Lord and act as a Lord. So when you are an actor, when you're a rock star, or whatever you happen to be, you have a sense of importance, you have a sense of glory. People are honoring you, people are glorifying you, people are applauding you. It gives you a sense of power, a sense of control. You gain more money. This is all lordship. But it doesn't bring it all happiness. The only happiness it brings is the moment in which you feel some accomplishment. And from that accomplishment, you have some sense of importance. But then that accomplishment fades into existence, And we need another accomplishment. And until we have that accomplishment, we're in anxiety. We're in uncertainty. We have doubt. Will I achieve it? Will I not achieve it? Or will someone else achieve it ahead of me? And will I be eclipsed by that particular person? So what happens is this, is that as a result of all these anxieties and miseries and uncertainties and doubts and troubles and problems and tribulations, it results in different kinds of miseries. Miseries which come from our own body and mind. You get ulcers just worrying about whether you're going to achieve some particular goal, or you may get a heart condition, or you may get a liver condition, a spleen condition, a pancreatic condition, or you get a problem in your shoulder joints, your neck joints, your spine, your back hurts, your head hurts, your neck hurts, your throat hurts, you've got the flu, you got this, you got that. These are all the miseries of the material world which we came here and got as a result of wanting to be a Lord. There is no escaping it. Sometimes people think they can escape the material miseries. You take this nostrum, take this potion, take this pill, take this capsule. Yes, relief for a few minutes, and then this nostrum or potion or pill, it becomes the basis of the beginning of some new disease. So it just goes on and on and on. There are people who are taking 25 and 35, 40 different pills every day, and that they have like a whole little satchel. They open it up, they got the red one, the blue one, the green one, the purple one, this one, that one. It's your whole life is just dedicated to pill pushing. That's what happens. So after a while, a person begins to wonder, is it really worth it? Is there no way in which we can become free of the miseries of material life? I said miseries which come from our own body and mind, miseries which come from other living entities. Other living entities, this person may rob you, a person may batter you, assault you, insult you. And you feel upset, you feel disturbed, you feel shaken, you feel abraded, and you don't feel happy. All night you're twisting and turning. You can't sleep in spite of the Advil that you've taken. Doesn't matter. You can't because the insult that you took or the blow that you took, it's worrying you, bothering you. Is it going to happen again? Am I going to be subject to that once more? What is the future for me? So, miseries are a part of it. And then there are the other miseries which come as a result of different karmas that we set in motion. All miseries which come to us are the result of action that we set. Like a ball, you throw it against the wall. If it's rubber, it comes back to you. Action, reaction. So, when we give hatred, or you give injury, or you give hostility, or you give sarcasm, or you give insult, at some time it comes back to us. And when it comes back to us, it doesn't always feel very pleasant. And when we receive it, when we feel it, then the result is that we become upset by it. And sometimes the upset can last for days and weeks and even years. In the Middle Ages, there used to be family fights, which people would actually kill each other. Like in Romeo and Juliet, they had that problem. Their parents, their families were not in harmony with one another. What was it, the Capulets and the who? The Montagues. Yeah, they hated each other. So therefore, they would not allow this marriage between Romeo and Juliet to take place. So these type of dissensions took place in a very, very graphic, in a very, very... patent way in earlier ages. But of course, they even take place now. If you turn on the news tonight, I'm sure somebody just got killed or somebody got shot just because he opened his mouth the wrong way. Yeah, it happens. People are sitting at a bar and they start to get into a discussion about baseball. And one says someone is the best that had ever been. Nobody. And the other one says, no, this person is the best. And the other one says, no, this one. And before you know it, they're ready to slug each other over who's the best shortstop that ever lived or the best pitcher that ever lived. What does it mean? Who cares? How is it going to affect your life? Why even concern yourself about it? Why argue over it? People are doing that. And finally, they become so pushed to the boiling point, they go out to the car, pull out the revolver, and not only kill the person or shoot the person whom they were arguing with, but a few extra ones to work off the extra anger. So this is going on. This is misery. As I said, misery of the body and mind, misery of our own body and mind, miseries coming from other living entities, and then the miseries which come from different catastrophes, cataclysms, earthquakes, fires, floods, hurricanes, cyclones, like we've just been seeing and hearing. Whole villages, whole towns become demolished completely. This is all, you have village karma, you have city karma, you have state karma, where whole states become affected. You have national karma, where all people become affected. Individual karma, family karma. All this karma is coming. Unless one is insulated from it. To be insulated from karma means that you're doing certain things that Krishna approves and likes, and he will therefore protect you from these karmic reactions which are coming to you. Krishna says, those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack. I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. So Krishna takes up, but when you become a devotee of Krishna, when you begin chanting Krishna's name regularly, when you become, when you begin to read these Bhagavad Gita regularly, when you remember the pastimes of Krishna regularly, when you serve the lotus feet or perform practical service, some of you I see doing service in the kitchen here, or some may be doing cleaning, or some may be giving donations. When you're doing service to the temple, which is, this is Krishna's home, the result of that is that Krishna promises to protect you. And he will give you the protection that you need in order to go higher to the next level or next stage of spiritual enlightenment or spiritual realization. It is not like you're here and then you suddenly go to the top. You gradually go one step, another step, another step, another step. Now Krishna says that one of the ways in which you can gain his mercy, one of the ways in which you can get his affection. Now, he loves everybody, but he doesn't express his affection to everyone. As he says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. I reward them accordingly. What does that mean? As they surrender, to the degree that they surrender unto me, to that degree I reward them. And what do I reward them with? Myself. I give them my mercy, I give them my power, I give them my love, I give them my protection, I give them my understanding. I give them what they need in order to make further advancement in spiritual life. So Krishna is there to help us. Where does he live? Where does he exist? As far as we're concerned, he lives right in the heart as the Supersoul. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and is known as the Supersoul. It's from the Bhagavad Gita. So he lives within our heart right next to us. There's the Supersoul and the Soul. The Soul is who we are. For the Soul, there was neither birth nor death at any time. It has not come into being, it doesn't come into being, it will not come into being. It is unborn, eternal, ever-existing and primeval. It is not slain when the body is slain. When the body is slain, the soul survives. And it leaves and it takes another birth, either in this world or the eternal world. This world meaning on the middle planets, the lower planets, the hellish planets. Depending upon what we have done, how we have served Krishna, that will determine where we go in our next lifetime. So Krishna is telling us how we can get His mercy, how we can get His guidance, how we can get His direction. As I just said, as they surrender unto me. So what does it mean to surrender? Well, that's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One who accepts whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. This is part of surrender. To accept whatever is favorable. In other words, if you see an opportunity to serve Krishna or to serve another devotee, it could be through cooking, it could be by sharing the holy name, it could be by giving a book to somebody, it could be by helping a person solve a spiritual or material problem. Whatever way it may happen to be, it's favorable because Krishna is pleased by that kind of service. Second, to reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Well, a person may think that, I want to give a nice hefty donation to the temple. Right now they're raising, doing fundraising because they want to, maybe they want to refurbish some of the rooms, or they need painting and they need, the altar needs work, we need new doors. So it's going to take about maybe $20,000-$30,000. So you don't have the $20,000 or $30,000. So what do? You say, well, they've got nice Halloween masks out there, so I can put the Halloween mask on, get a little toy gun, go into Chase Bank, hold them up, get the $20,000, and then I can give it to the temple. Why not? It's unfavorable. Krishna says, as I just mentioned, accept what is favorable for discharging devotion, reject what is unfavorable. It's unfavorable because it hurts other human beings. You're taking something that belongs to somebody else. Ultimately, it belongs to Krishna, but Krishna has entrusted it to somebody. Somebody entrusts you with a certain amount of money, you put it into the bank, and then somebody comes and steals that money. What right does he have to do that? Somebody earned it, somebody worked for it, somebody sweated for it. So Krishna says, no, don't steal. Even in the Bible it says, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. So surrender is a very important principle. And as I said, accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. Believe firmly that the Lord will always protect you, his devotee. He will protect you. You need to have this faith. And he does protect his devotees. Sometimes he may let them get into a little bit of trouble, a little bit of problem. Sometimes this question always comes up at the end of the class. I'll answer it now so we don't have to wait. Yeah, but Krishna says, I got into a car accident. Why didn't Krishna protect me? The reason Krishna allows some difficult or problematical things to happen to us at times is because when we get too proud, Krishna is protecting, he's guiding, he's helping, and you get too proud, you think you're very important, you think you're Krishna's number one. And Krishna wants you to know, no, you're not number one. So the way he lets you know is that he withdraws some of his protection. It may be on a physical level or a mental level. Mentally, you're normally very sharp. You've got a good mind, you've good concentration, excellent attention. And one day you wake up, you can't concentrate. Your mind is jumping all over the place. So he withdraws the mercy that he gives to let us know that we have to depend upon him. To let us know that he's the one who's giving us the good mind, the good working mind. He's the one who's giving us security. He's the one who's giving us all the things that we need. But we forget that. And we think we're the ones who are doing it because we're producing the effort, the activity, the energy. But actually all our energy is coming from Krishna. We can't see without Krishna's mercy. We can't speak without Krishna's mercy. For example, several weeks ago, I was in Denver, Colorado, and I had 5 speaking engagements. So I got the first one done. The next day, I woke up with laryngitis. And there went 4 of my speaking engagements. You never know. You can't think necessarily that, yes, I'm definitely going to give those 4 talks. It's in Krishna's hands. And the more we recognize, now you might say, well, why did Krishna give? You're his devotee. Why should he do that for him? For whatever reason he has, I never question Krishna. When he gives me something, I just accept it and try to become more humble, because usually it's to flatten me a little more than I am. And flattening could be a good thing, because you come to the recognition and realization that you're not all that you may think. And when you come to that recognition and realization, that's a very good thing, because then you begin to realize that you need Krishna. You must depend upon Krishna. And that comes me to the next, or the fourth principle of surrender, to, as I said, the first was to accept what is favorable. The second is to reject what is unfavorable. The third is to believe firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. And the fourth is to always feel dependent upon the mercy of God. And the fifth is to always be, the fifth is to have no separate interest besides the interest of God. Well, you may say, well, look, I have a job, I have a business. How can I work at those jobs or businesses and also work for Krishna exclusively, totally? How can I do that? The secret is in knowing how to do your regular job as a love offering to Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita right here, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do this as an offering unto me. Is you do it for me. Never mind your boss, never mind the CEO, never mind the financial top officer, never mind the president of the United States. I'm your boss. You offer it to me. And therefore, when you're doing it, you're always thinking, yes, you have a picture of Krishna over the computer screen, and you're looking at Krishna and looking down at the keys, tapping away, and yes, this is for you. How many of us have pictures over the computer screens? Just one? Nobody else? Well, starting tomorrow when you go to work, put a picture of Krishna over the computer screen. Make devotional service a thing of every moment and not a once a week thing, or even a 2-hour thing, even if you're chanting around. That's good. But the whole idea is Krishna says, always think of me while you're working. He says to Arjuna, therefore Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. And at the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. So he's saying, I'm going to repeat that. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me and at the same time perform your prescribed duty of fighting. Same time. So at the same time that you're clicking away at your computer keys, look up and see your boss. And if you see your boss, Krishna, smile at him and say, thank you for letting me know who my real boss is. You're feeding me, you're clothing me, you're sheltering me, medicating me, you're giving me everything I need. You've given me a car, you give me money for the car. You've given me friends that help me and assist me to do what I have to do. You've given me books in which I become enlightened by. You're doing everything for me, therefore you truly are my employer. You truly are my boss. You are the one that I should be thinking of as often and as much as possible. As Krishna says, what does he say? Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances, worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Surely you will come to me if you think of me, he says. So what I'm trying to do now is just encourage everyone to think of Krishna more and more so that you get his blessings. And what are those blessings? Those blessings are peace of mind. Those blessings are knowledge of what to do and what not to do. Attraction to the scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita. Attraction to Srila Prabhupada's wonderful, some of his great discourses that you can hear on the CDs. Attraction to the deities. Having a friendly association with the Lord. Making Krishna your friend instead of someone who's just distant. He loves you. He wants you. When you go, for example, when a youngster person's finished high school, he's going away to college. What do the parents say when he leaves? Well, please email me when you get there. We want to hear from you. Call me. Skype me. Whatever. So parents love their children. They like to hear from them. Krishna loves you. He wants to hear from you. In the form of prayer, my dear Lord, I have so many weaknesses. I have so many failings. I have so many uncertainties. I have so many doubts. I need your help. Please resolve those doubts for me. Give me the strength I need, the confidence I need, the power that I need, the love that I need. Help me overcome my depression, or my dejection, my uncertainty, my doubts. Make me clear, make me firm, make me concentrated. Help me to never forget you, because to absorb myself in you is to absorb myself in peace, in strength, in love, in joy, in bliss, in strength, in everything good and peaceful and purposeful. This is what Krishna is. Okay? Any arguments? So, this is what Krishna is. I was going to tell a story, but it's getting late. How many want to leave now? No hands? Yeah, you don't have to be embarrassed. Many people have walked out on me before. And I don't get insulted over that. I actually wonder that all of you are still here. So, we got one person ready to leave. Thank you, Hare Krishna. So, anyway, the important, what I wanted to tell is a little story, because it relates to what I'm talking about surrender. And that will be the end. It'll probably take 5 minutes at the most. It's the story of King Rantidev, if I can remember it well. Beautiful, wonderful story with a great deal of impact. Once King Rantidev from India, many thousands of years ago, he was known as an enlightened king. This means he was a God-realized king. And as a God-realized king, he was very concerned about his subjects. He wanted to enlighten his subjects. He wanted them to love God. He wanted them to desire God. He wanted them to serve God, to surrender to God. But because of their past karma, the sins, the wrongs, the evils that we all do in the past, and which we may not have repented for, and which we might not have done away with, as a result, we still may have lust and anger and greed and envy and illusion and pride and sloth and gluttony and so many of those things that take over our lives and which prevent us, hinder us from becoming God-realized. So, he decided to perform a 48-day fast. No water, no food. And it would be for the benefit of his subjects. He didn't need it for himself, as I said, he was already enlightened. But he would do it for his subjects. 48 days, no food, no water. And his wife was to join him. So after 48 days, it was time to break the fast. He was all ready. Sorry. And he's sat down on one of these, and there was a table out there, and his servants brought in a huge feast for him, and he was going to break the fast in that way. And then just as he was about to do that, there was some noise coming from the outside, and it happened to have been a Brahmin who was arguing with one of the servants. He says, "I want to see the king." So the king overheard it, and he says, "Well, what's going on there?" So servant says, "Well, this Brahmin, he wants to talk to you. So better he talk to you after you eat, because you look, he was just like a bone rack. He was very thin, and it looked like he was ready to die. He looked like he was ready for starvation." So the servant, of course, thinking of the benefit of the king, he wanted the king to eat first before anyone would see him. But the king said, no, bring him over here. So the servant brought him over, and the king said, "How can I serve you?" Because he was a Brahmin. But the Brahmin said, "I'm very hungry. Ah, I'm so, so hungry." And he was looking at that big platter of food, the steam coming up out of it, the fragrances all over the place. So the king said, "No problem. I'll give you half of what I have here." And the servant says, but, look at you, you're starving, you should eat first. No, the Brahmin should be fed first. So what he did is he took half of the food, he gave it to the Brahmin. He told his servant to put down a chair and to put a little table there. The Brahmin took it, and half of the food was eaten by the Brahmin, and a half hour later he left. So what the king now had was half of what he originally had. So he gave a half of that. He sent it to his wife, which means now he had a quarter of what he had. As he was about to proceed to eat the one quarter that was left, somebody else was at the door. And he said he wanted to see the king. So finally the servant, he let him in. And in letting him in, what happened is that the person was a sudra. He was a laborer. And he said that he was very hungry and he needed food. He wanted to eat. So the king said, well, sit down. And he had the place cleaned up. And he said, I can give you half of what I have here. So remember, originally it was a whole place. Then he gave half to the Brahmin. And what was left over, he had a half, gave a half of that or a quarter to his wife, and he had a quarter left. So he gave half of that to the Shudra. So he had 1/8 left. The Shudra sat down, he ate, he enjoyed it, and got up, and he left. So the king just had a little bit, 1/8 of the original large platter of food there. And then someone else came in. It was a man who had three dogs, and he was very shabbily dressed. He was dirty, filthy, and so forth. So he said, I'm very hungry. I need to eat something. So the king says, okay, you take this 1/8. You take what he had from before. He gave it to him, and he ate it, and he gave some to his dogs, and then they got up, and they left. So the king had no food left. Of course, food was being prepared in the kitchen, but it would take a while before it would be completed. And the servants were worried that whether the king would even live long enough to eat the food that was being prepared. And then another person came in who was what we call an untouchable. He was a dog eater. So, and he was also smelling and filthy and dirty. And he came and he said to the all that was left was a goblet of water. So he said to the king, I'm so thirsty. I'm dying of thirst. Please, can I have some water? So the king says, yes, you take my water here. The servant says, but it's all you've got right now. Never mind. Give him the water. So he gave him the water, and as he offered him the water, and as he did, he put his palms together, he gave him the water, and he said, my dear Lord, and he began to pray. He said, I don't pray to you for the 8 mystic powers of the yogis, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only ask that you let me stay among the living beings and bear difficulties for them so that they may be spared of all difficulties and all sufferings. That's all he wanted, to be able to sacrifice his life for other beings. So he gave the untouchable the water. He drank the water. And no sooner did he drink the water that the king suddenly felt a surge of energy. This is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the way, this story. The king felt a surge of energy. He felt strong. He felt energetic. He felt healthy. He didn't feel any thirst. He didn't have any hunger. His distress, if there was any, was gone. His feeling of frailty was gone. He felt like a new person. He was wondering, where is this coming from? How come I feel so strong and energetic and uplifted? And then suddenly, the untouchable disappeared. And in his place came Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they said, yes, we were the ones who were playing the part of the Brahmin, the Shudra, and the man with the dogs, and the untouchable. And the reason we were doing this is to test or to try to find out the degree of mercy you had acquired in your life. And you have obviously the greatest degree of mercy that we have ever seen. So the king, he was so surprised at what he saw. So they said, what boons, what blessings would you like? So he said, I don't really need any blessings. I don't need any blessings because I am already blessed. And he said that I have no material desires. That's my blessing. And he said, I also know that temporary material things cannot bring real happiness. That is my blessing. So I really don't need anything from you. The very fact that I could fast for all my subjects, for everyone who is in this kingdom, so that they would get the benefit of my fast, and they would become more spiritualized as a result of my fast. A little bit like Jesus Christ. He himself took, he was crucified. Why did he become crucified? Because he wanted to take the sins of humanity. All those who would follow his teachings, he would bear their sins. Similarly, the king would bear the sins of his subjects if they followed the teachings. And the teachings that they would follow would be the teachings of the king. Because whatever a great man does, common men follow. Whatever a great person does, common men follow. Whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So, therefore, the kingdom was, of course, all the people became happier, more fulfilled, more satisfied. And that's the end of the story of King Runti Dev. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Sri Krishna Ki Jai. Srimati Rukmini Devi Ki Jai. Thank you. Are there any questions or any comments that you'd like to make? Yes. What does that mean? Well, that's another lecture. Really, maybe the next time I get to talk in 3 months, but I'll just give you the essence, what it means, basically. If you surrender, as it means, it applies to this. If you surrender to Krishna, you give him your heart, you give him your mind, you give him your body, he will take care of you, and if you do certain activities, which, due to your ignorance, they just happen to be sinful, Krishna will wipe them away and give you the knowledge that you need to not do those things again. It's not that he supports sinful activities. It means that sometimes out of accident, sometimes out of ignorance, we may perform something wrong. So he can, and not only that, but quite often even, we may even know that something is wrong, we have the knowledge of it, but still we do it because of weakness, because of a failing. So Krishna says, I will protect you, I will give you strength, I will enable you to not do those things. So, just depend upon me, and I will give you an influx or an insurge of my energy, my love, and you will be able to be fully God-realized in due course of time. It's a promise. Okay? Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Jai. Oh, thank you so much. Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Thank you for coming. Guy, thank you.